ओम ज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
In the Upanishads, there is a narration of how a group of rishis went to the palace of a certain king who they knew possessed one kind of vidya which they wished to learn. So when they came, he as a kshatriya respectfully seated them as brahmanas above him. And asked them how he could serve them. So they requested to be taught this particular vidya. And to their surprise, he refused. He made all arrangements for their comfortable stay, provided all nice foods for them. So in their apartment where they were staying that evening, they discussed among themselves, why did the king refuse to teach us? Then they realized that we were sitting above him. You cannot learn by sitting above. It's alright, I'm already speaking now. Just sit and listen. Knowledge comes down. So the next day they went and they sat below him and they asked him to teach him and he agreed and he taught them. And as long as they were learning from him, they sat beneath him. And at other times they would sit above him. Because knowledge flows down out of a matter of social etiquette. Because they were brahmanas, they would sit above him. As you like to sit above now. You can't learn anything by sitting above. That's why I'm telling this. Because by proposing to put the hearers above the speaker, you have demonstrated the inherent fault in modern education. That there's no emphasis on culture. They think that knowledge is something that can be bought and sold. You go for education, you have to pay so much to go to a certain school. The teachers are paid. It's a business. People start schools to make money. No one can learn anything of any value in such a situation. Because culture comes before education. Even in our society, there often it seems to be this kind of misunderstanding that we have education, which is very good. Education in the subject matter that is taught in Srila Prabhupada's books, that should be there. But if we approach it with the same mentality as the education we get at school, that it's something to be gobbled up and regurgitate it, and then you get a degree, then you can't learn anything. There's one of our centers in Europe, which they have a lot of emphasis on education. Devotees come, they pay quite a considerable amount to go and learn there, and they offer different courses and you take degrees, but from what I've heard, there's no emphasis in the community on proper behavioral standards. So, well, they just adopt the, or they have the general behavioral standards or cultural standards of the broader society around them, which means that in the Western world, many of our devotees, just like the kamis all around them, they marry, they divorce, they have sexual affairs outside marriage, and they just consider, well, that's normal. One of my friends, a devotee, after being married for so many years, his wife got in some bad association, and she decided, she couldn't give any reason except, I just don't want to be married anymore. She just decided to divorce him. So he complained to the temple authorities that, well, you should say something. And they said, well, it's just normal. So what is the value of anything they're teaching? If we're teaching to come to the highest platform of knowledge, but you don't even have any basic human culture, then it's meaningless. So, before formal education, there has to be at least some basic modicum of culture. That's why the Shastric knowledge was taught to the Dvijas, twice born. People, they complain, oh, the Vedic culture is discriminatory because Shudras are not to be taught the Veda. Only those who are twice born. Vaishyas, they're also taught Vedic knowledge to some extent. Kshatriyas, more so. And Brahmanas, they are extensively taught. It's according to the level of culture. One is able and eligible to absorb this knowledge. That's why we see what are the qualities of a disciple given in Shastra. One has to be peaceful, self-controlled, gentle, submissive. So many qualities are required. One should know the basic culture. Please all move in, otherwise I have to tell again and again at this point, that basic point of culture, that you can't sit above. This Ravi Shankar, not the one who's presently famous for being it's a hot competition between all the bogus gurus, which is the most bogus, but at the present time he's a hot contender for the most bogus guru of all. But there was another famous Ravi Shankar. I think he's still alive, the sitar player. So he must be quite old now. I didn't hear he died. So he was in the West and he was lamenting how you go and you speak to people and they sit with their feet pointing to you. And they're supposed to be, they come to learn from you and they sit with their feet pointing toward you. So how can they learn anything? They're not fit to be taught, actually. You can teach the technique, and the persons who are learning may learn the technique and they may become expert in the techniques, but they can never get the mercy to enter into the true spirit of it. Everything that we learn, it's not just a matter of learning different techniques and even being able to explain it very expertly. But learning is hearing is a means by which to receive mercy of the Supreme Lord. Taking notes? You're going to pass your exam? You can write it out. Learning is a means to gain the mercy of the Lord. You can write it out, get 100 marks. It doesn't mean you understood anything. So the Bhakti Shastri course is good. But without culture, without proper culture, without proper understanding of how to behave, then that knowledge won't actually help us very much. Some basic points are there to be understood. Now here, this is covered up now, there is a diorama in preparation of Srila Prabhupada, which I also, how can we teach with the diorama, Prabhupada's, the form of Srila Prabhupada's divine head is there, but then underneath it's just some kind of mess. So how can we look at that? How can we, of course you may say it's only in preparation, but that's another mistake. We think that, well, the form of the Lord or the form of His devotee, it's just a mass of matter. So people say, I went to Vrindavan and I bought a deity. It's very beautiful. You can't buy a deity, nor is a deity it. But we think that, or someone gave me this deity. As if anyone, it's like, you know, it's like a dhoti or something. You can just give. Someone gifted me this deity. But you can't just give. I went to the bazaar and I bought God cheap, only 300 rupees. Then I gave to someone. And someone, they worshipped for some time, then they got fed up, so they gave to someone else. All this madness is going on in the name of bhakti. Because people have no basic understanding. So this basic understanding, that comes before education. Or primary education. Before one becomes a dvija, twice born, in the first guru is mother. The mother and father prepare one to go to the spiritual guru. That's their normal culture. That they teach you how to behave. Then you can go to guru. Not that he has to teach you, now you sit below. And then you'll say, who is this guy? Who is this guy to tell? That's why in the modern education, the teachers are not safe in the school. I don't know about in India. Probably in Delhi it's getting like that. In the West it's been like that for a long time. The teachers are not safe from being attacked by the pupils. Because the parents are just like wild animals. And then the children are like that also. And then you'll send them to school. What for? So they can get some education, how to become an educated Shudra. And the actual purpose of education, to understand what is the purpose of life, their education teaches them to be against that principle. You become more atheistic by your so-called education. So such education is not only valueless, but it is a terrible disturbance in the purpose, in attaining the purpose of human life. So, therefore, Prabhupada referred to the modern schools and universities as slaughterhouses. You want to learn something? Come down here. All right, well, you can't learn anything. Why the king didn't want to teach? He didn't want to give this vidya because there's a certain maryada, there's a certain etiquette to be observed, which if not observed, the king may... It's not that the king was thinking, I'm so great, but rather the vidya, it's an insult to Vidya Devi, to Saraswati, to attempt to teach in such a way. Why does the speaker sit higher? Does the speaker think he's greater? No, rather the knowledge which is it is his service to present is to be honored. That's his way of thinking. And those who are to hear, they honor the speaker because he is delivering that knowledge. The center is Krishna always. Guru is honored because he's a representative of Krishna. Brahmana is honored because he has knowledge. That knowledge is ultimately knowledge of Krishna. When the Brahmana caste thought we should be honored just because we're born in a certain family, then they cease to be actual Brahmanas. Sringi, the son of Shamika Rishi, cursed Parikshit Maharaj that he should die for Parikshit Maharaj's transgression of the proper principles of etiquette, which it was. Parikshit Maharaj should not have garlanded Shamika Rishi with a dead snake. He should not have done that. But then Sringi, the son of Shamika Rishi, should not have cursed Parikshit Maharaj to die. He did that. And then from the top of human society, where the culture should have been upheld, it was infringed. Then the Kshatriyas, without the proper protection from the Brahmanas, they ceased to exist. The proper Kshatriyas ceased to exist, and the Brahmanas also couldn't exist. Brahmanas require Kshatriyas, and Kshatriyas require Brahmanas. Now there's neither. There's only something vaguely resembling Vaishyas and a large class of Rakshasas who are something like Shudras. People tell us proudly, "Well, I'm a Brahmana. I'm from a very good Brahmana family. And I'm working in a multinational corporation." Very proudly. Working in a multinational corporation means by vritti, by occupation, you are a Shudra. Shvavritti, that's called in Bhagavatam. To accept employment from another is the livelihood of a dog. A dog becomes the servant of another to become maintained. So if one becomes a servant of another, if one works for another to get maintenance, that one becomes on the platform of a dog or a Shudra. And very proud. I'm a Brahmana. I'm a dog. So Prabhupada, this diorama is there of Prabhupada teaching Krishna consciousness, Markine Bhagavad Dharma, Krishna consciousness in America, where there's no culture. That Prabhupada was able to preach Krishna consciousness in America is a miracle. Everyone told before he went is not possible. Such people cannot become Krishna conscious. Even the Indians can't begin. They're not interested in Krishna consciousness. How the Americans are going to be? Even one of Prabhupada's godbrothers who had been to the West in the 1930s, sent by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, maintained at great expense by the Gauriya Math from India, spending money from India to maintain them in the West. They, for various reasons, he came back to India with the mission unfulfilled. And later he said about Prabhupada's successful preaching in the West that, "Well, I could have also done that, but I didn't like to mix with the lower class of people." So Prabhupada from his purports in the first canto of Bhagavatam, which is what he brought with him to the West, it's clear that he was particularly addressing the leading class of people. He expected that Krishna consciousness would appeal to the intellectual circles in the Western countries. That people of higher culture, as far as it goes in the Western countries, they will appreciate this. But what happened was that Prabhupada found interest mostly, he found there was some interest among intellectual circles, and probably in the very first days of Prabhupada's preaching in the West, but not much, and also that was some vague curiosity. But Prabhupada found some genuine interest, some genuine spiritual search among the hippies, who, even by Western standards, were considered uncultured. Can you imagine? Well, you can't imagine, because you're also uncultured, following the modern Indian youth in the big cities, following the Western, so you'd have no idea what culture is. Although, well, still something better than in the West. But in the West, of course, there's no idea of Vedic culture. But even so, even in the West, we say there are people who are somewhat cultured and some who are not. So Prabhupada went among the most uncultured, those who were making a specific point to be completely uncultured, not being unclean, being intoxicated, transgressing all norms of behavior, having sex publicly, totally uncultured. But Prabhupada found that somehow or other among these people there is some interest, genuine interest. So he worked with what he had. He did what he could among those who were responding. Nevertheless, he wanted his Western disciples to come to India so that they could imbibe the culture. Nowadays, I don't know what they're going to imbibe if they come to India. They may end up becoming even less cultured than they are in the West. Or in India, they're very eager to become as grossly uncultured as possible. It's a symptom of Kali Yuga that people take pride in being grossly uncultured. People think that the more brash and arrogant and misbehaved you are, that's considered better. So it's an age where lack of or unashamed transgression of everything cultural is considered not only acceptable but prestigious. That's something very good. I don't care for anyone. I just do whatever I like. Someone who says like that, people think, wow, that's really good. Where, in an age where music, the most popular musicians in the world are the Rolling Stones, a rock band whose... did they come to India? They came also. They go everywhere. So their whole presentation is that we're rude, we're nasty, we don't care for anyone. And that's very popular. Just see. That music itself is hellish music. Music that also Saraswati knowledge ultimately, when one goes to all philosophy, one comes to music. Which music? Kirtan. And then ultimately dance. Dance is the highest form of culture. Krishna, Ras Lila, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sankirtan with dancing. That is the highest form of culture. But then they have in the West this techno rock, which is called music. And people dance. They've been taking intoxication like devils. They're dancing. So supposed to uplift the soul, they have taken as a medium for dragging us down. Actually, this rock music, which is popular among people of very low aspirations, people who are attracted to tamagun and rajagun, they're attracted to rock music. They think, it's really nice. Boom, ba-boom, 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 ba-boom. They like, now they've introduced in our kirtan, instead of shankha baje, ghanta baje, madhur, madhur, madhur baje, now they've brought this bongo drum, which gives a good beat, heavy beat, but it's not madhur. It's not part of it drowns out, even if you're playing a mridanga. The sound of the mridanga, which is very sweet and pleasing to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is drowned out by that heavy beat. But because we like this tamasic heavy rhythm, then we think, this is really good. We like it. We don't think that kirtan is meant for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pleasure. So we like it, therefore it's good. I like it, that is the proof that it's good. We don't care to consider that none of our acharyas ever introduce such a thing, but I like it. Sounds good to me. So this boom, 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 this drum is actually an African drum. So this rock music, it has its roots in one kind of music called voodoo. Voodoo is comes from Africa. It's similar to the tantricism in the Western countries. Sorry, tantricism in India, where they call up different spirits and they do things like if a pregnant woman dies, they take the embryo and they have sex with dead bodies and all kinds of they get power by invoking very low spirits. So this voodoo is a kind of tantric music with heavy beat. Boom, boom. They use this kind of drum. So that is the root of what became in America through the American slaves, the blues music and the jazz music, and out of that came rhythm and blues and then rock and roll and then modern rock music. Its roots are in actually very deeply demoniac, the very lowest kind of culture, but we like it because we are so much in the lower modes of nature. The Prabhupada very kindly brought us kirtan. Kirtan should also be performed sweetly for the pleasure of the Lord. Simply screaming and yelling and banging as much as we can, that is not kirtan. Kirtan means that is for Krishna's pleasure. Krishna, you see, he dresses very nicely. He's very beautiful. Krishna is most cultured. So kirtan also doesn't mean it should. Kirtan means with enthusiasm. But simply to make a big loud noise and to turn the mic on as loud as possible and scream as loudly as possible and bang everything as much as we can. That is not kirtan. That is another symptom of how far away we are from Krishna. So there are some very basic points which we have to learn. If we are taught to become Krishna conscious, the very crucial point of Krishna consciousness is to understand Krishnarthe Akhila Cheshta. Everything should be done for the pleasure of Krishna. But then, even theoretically accepting this, we make the mistake of thinking that if I like it, Krishna must like it. And so we think, well, I like pizza, so no more, Krishna has to eat pizza. Because I like it. Or, I like this kind of music, so therefore Krishna must like it also. But it's not like that. We have to find out what Krishna likes and do like that. And if there's something that we're attached to but Krishna doesn't like, we should understand that is our contamination. Not that we should try to make Krishna fit what we want. But Krishna conscious means to fit into what Krishna wants. Fit ourselves into what He wants us to be, what He wants us to do. Not vice versa. That is the mistake of all so-called religions in the world. That they think that God, whoever in their conception that or it might be, is meant for our convenience. But Krishna conscious, the crux of that is to understand that Krishna is a person. He has His personal likes and dislikes. And acting in a way that Krishna likes, that is bhakti. And forswearing that which Krishna doesn't like, that is also bhakti. That's at all levels of Krishna consciousness. Dharma means to act in harmony with the pulse of the universe. The pulse of the universe is coming from Krishna. There's another pulse that is presided over by Durga Devi. If we get in line with that which causes us repeated birth and death, that is not actually dharma. Savai pumsang paro dharma yato bhaktir adhokshaje ahaituki apratihata yayatma supersedati. Dharma, real dharma, means to go beyond the frequency, to stop acting on the frequency of this material world and to tune into the frequency of the spiritual world of Adhokshaja, of Krishna, who cannot be perceived by those who are in the lower level of consciousness. This Vedic culture is to uplift our consciousness so that we become eligible to enter into the realm of serving Krishna. So there are many things to be learned, even primarily. That's why this Vedic education, traditionally, it's not given to anyone and everyone. It's some qualification. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is very merciful. He has made this Krishna consciousness available to everyone. But still, that it's available to everyone doesn't mean that one can remain at the general level of consciousness and come to Krishna consciousness. That it's available to everyone means everyone is invited to come to the higher level. Not that you remain at the lower level and call that Krishna consciousness. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy is not that he makes Krishna available even if one is in the modes of material nature, but rather gives the opportunity to everyone to come above the modes of material nature. So, anyway, there's one thing you can learn. There are many things to learn. That in future, if you're going to arrange speaking engagement, it's proper to arrange it so that the hearers do not sit above the speaker. That you may have in a modern university. That's considered a very convenient arrangement. But modern university is the gateway to hell. How to learn many things which will make us more and more puffed up and forget Krishna and think, well, Krishna has no relevance. What is this? It's something from the past. Now we know so many things. We don't need all this mumbo jumbo Bhagavad Gita. I don't need that. I'm a scientist. We foolishly think that Bhagavad Gita has no relevance, although Bhagavad Gita is eternally relevant. We think Bhagavad Gita is outdated and now we have computer chips. Now we have mobile phones. There'll be a time when mobile phones are completely forgotten, but Bhagavad Gita, that knowledge will still be completely relevant when mobile phones are totally irrelevant. This kind of gadget comes and goes. As far as I'm concerned, the sooner it goes, the better. But Bhagavad Gita, this knowledge, this is for our eternal benefit. But we're so damn puffed up. We think, it's no use to me. I'm on a better platform. Just see, everything upside down. Actually, in the modern university, it's very suitable. They have the hearer sitting above the speaker. That's indicative of the whole educational system being upside down. You cannot learn anything. And you can insult the teacher. That's considered a sign of being very, very, you know, with it. You insult the teacher. Insult everybody. Someone who's expert in insulting others, we think, it's really, just see, he doesn't take any crap from anyone. But education actually means to become a shishya, means you're prepared to take the chastisement. If you're not prepared to take that, then you cannot be educated. Cannot learn anything of any value. So this, of course, this is for seeing the, what they call the puppet show. But this arrangement in the university of the, having the auditorium with the speaker below the hearers is indicative that they are dedicated to the principle of not ever learning anything of any real value. So in actual culture, there is a hierarchy. There's not this democracy, so-called democracy, which is all nonsense. The Western countries, there's so much insistent. There must be democracy. I was just in Thailand where they had the 18th military coup since 1936. I don't think they ever shot anyone or killed anyone in any of them, because in Buddhism, where Thailand is a Buddhist country, they believe in peacefulness, although everyone is a meat eater. And in fact, there was, or there is, a sect of Buddhist monks who there who are strictly vegetarian. But the regular government-supported monks who are strictly non-vegetarian were very much opposed to that, and they made a case against them, and the main proof they had that this group of Buddhist monks are not genuine Buddhists is that they're vegetarian. Just see. Buddhism is ahimsa paramo dharma, but they consider the main symptom of a Buddhist is that you must be a non-vegetarian. So anyway, I was just there, so they yet again the democratically elected government was thrown out because they consider that we're democratically elected by the people, so they have democratically given us the right to exploit the people and be as corrupt as we possibly can. So they're insistent in the West, where there must be democracy. And if you don't believe in democracy, then they'll invade your country and bomb you and, you know, shoot you and until you agree to have democracy. They really believe in democracy, isn't it? It's worth killing if it's worth killing you for. If you don't believe in democracy, we'll come in and, you know, take over, and we'll force you to be democratic. Everyone is equal, which is nonsense. Everyone's not equal. You think in America there's so much you think in America you can join the army and then it's in the army there's democracy? That, okay, men march. Oh, wait a minute, I want to take a vote on this. No such thing. You think you're going, you work for some American company and you go in and so many people, they're working for American companies. So you think you can tell the boss, hey, wait a minute, you can't tell me what to do. You damn well can. I'm paying you. You have to do what I say. It's all a nonsense idea. Democracy, no one should sit above anyone else. Prabhupada in 1968, he was giving a lecture and all his disciples were bowing down to him. Prabhupada stringently taught this, which is so much against the American way of thinking. That one, so someone protested, I don't see why I should bow down. Prabhupada, you don't see why. That is your disease. You think you don't have to bow down, but you will be forced to bow down. Death will force you to fall down. So better you learn to bow down now. You bow down to the right person who will teach you how you will not have to fall down into repeated birth and death. You have to go down. So learn how to go down, where to go down, in such a way that you will go up to Krishna. And when you go up to Krishna, what will you do? You'll bow down. You have to bow down. No, I don't see why I have to bow down. You don't see, but anyway, you may disagree, but you are forced. So this is culture to accept there is a hierarchy, and under education and culture, both must go together. Culture without education means like Thailand, where they have the basic Vedic culture of respecting authority, very respectful to monks, but without education of what is the purpose of that culture, they end up with meat-eating monks and meat-eating Buddhists. So culture is required, but education without culture, that is also meaningless. You'll simply become a big scholar. You cannot practically apply that. By learning, one simply becomes proud. If one studies for Bhakti Shastra examination and gets high marks and becomes proud, then his whole study I'm better. Then his whole study becomes worse than useless. Better you didn't study. You should study is good, but if you become proud by studying, better you scrub the floor. That was the system, at least. When I joined the temple, first thing you do, no question, clean all day. Clean the stairs, clean the toilets, everything, cleaning, cleaning, cleaning. And if you're cleaning and it's not properly done, chastise like anything. You have to clean properly for Krishna. So you may think, well, I'm highly educated. I can do better than this. Yes, that's why you have to clean the floor. When you can understand that this MA, PhD, MSc is my disqualification, that I spent so much time amassing information thinking that it was useful when it has no connection with Krishna. That is not qualification. People ask you, what is your qualification? They should ask, what is your disqualification? Now, I'm disqualified by having MSc, PhD. That is my disqualification. Because that simply fills our head with more stool, more garbage. We've studied so much from people who know nothing of any value, and we ourselves have amassed lots of information with no value, and we're such fools that we think it has value. Whereas in fact the only knowledge of any real value is to understand Krishna, that knowledge. So we're very proud. I'm a highly educated. Previously the caste system in India was Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. Now the caste system is PhD, MSc, BSc, HSc, SSc, thumbprint. So, it's a new caste system. They judge you. What is your value? I see even our devotees, they judge. This devotee, he's a PhD devotee. And this is just an HSC devotee. Oh, there's a difference. We'll see who's actually a devotee by how much they understand what is the value of Krishna consciousness and what is the non-value of everything else. As long as we put any value on anything else except Krishna consciousness, it means we haven't understood at all what Krishna consciousness is. So anyway, please learn this thing. It's just one thing. There's so many things to learn. Knowledge comes down. Vidya Devi is not our servant. If we think that this is the mistake of modern education, we think we shall get knowledge and we shall use it to enhance our own position. But we take knowledge sitting under, not to make ourselves big in the material sense, but to understand that I am Das Anudas Anudas. We take the knowledge so that we can apply that, how to become the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant. Mundane knowledge, or even spiritual knowledge acquired with a mundane attitude, that is taken to enhance my own foolishness of considering myself a very great person. So it's all an insult to Vidya Devi, who never agrees to manifest herself. She is never present when someone is proud. Either if the speaker is proud or the hearer is proud, then however much apparent knowledge may be there, there's no actual knowledge. Vidya Devi does not agree. She is the servant of Krishna. She is not the servant of our foolishness. she will not be present where there is any desire other than that to serve Krishna. She very happily bestows her blessings upon those who desire to serve Krishna. But those who think that they shall take knowledge so that they can establish themselves as very great in defiance of Krishna, they may think that they are getting knowledge, but they are only getting the manifestation of Dushta Saraswati, not Shuddha Saraswati. Dushta Saraswati means, just like Maya Devi, she is the Chayeva Yasya Bhuvanani Bibharti Durga. She is the shadow potency of the Supreme Lord. She is a manifestation of Krishna's Antaranga Shakti, Srimati Radharani, who exists only to please Krishna. Her perverted reflection is manifested in Devi Dham, this material world, where that perverted energy, everyone's energy, we take energy in the spiritual world, we take energy, we take inspiration from Srimati Radharani. Everyone is getting energy, she is giving energy, she is giving potency to everyone to assist her in her service of serving Krishna in unlimited ways. That perverted reflection in the material world is Maya Devi, who gives us the energy and the inspiration to become enthusiastic, to defy Krishna, and to forget Krishna in unlimited ways. So Dushta Saraswati, we may become very enlivened by the prospect of becoming very learned, but that learning simply serves to further pollute and contaminate our intelligence, so that the actual manifestation of Saraswati, Shuddha Saraswati, we never have any understanding of that. Krishna Priya Saraswati, actual Saraswati, she is very dear to Krishna. Krishna Priya Saraswati, Krishna Bhakti. What is that? Krishna Bhakti Tarmati. Vinode Shai Shai Bhai Bhav. See this. This knowledge of Krishna manifested through Saraswati. That is the very heart of, she is in the very heart of Krishna. That knowledge is not so much intellectual knowledge, but knowledge of what is pleasing to Krishna, what is dear to Krishna. So that is to be learned. It is not exactly an intellectual process. Some of the most learned devotees, learned means they know how to please Krishna. They had no formal education. Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj was fully conversant with all Siddhanta. But from the external viewpoint, he could not even sign his name. Big, big scholars would be humbled by him. His one disciple, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, was so much learned. Why, we may think, why then did he take initiation from Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj? Just to show that one may be, from the external point of view, the most learned person in the world, or not even, either. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was so learned, he became the disciple of Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj, just to show that learning, the principle of learning, is a servant of the principle of bhakti, not round the other way. You cannot learn to become a devotee. I shall learn, I shall take notes, I shall learn how to become it. One cannot, by any mental or intellectual process, one cannot learn to become a devotee. Learning is good if it is subordinate to the principle of service. Otherwise, it is simply a heavy weight that drags us down to hell. So this one thing, we can try to learn, that knowledge comes down, cannot sit above and learn anything. Submissiveness has to be there. And even, you may say, what difference does it make? The same things being spoken. And what difference does it make, sitting above or below? Sitting below shows there is submissiveness. Of course, it may be that one is sitting below, but in one's heart, one is envious of the speaker. That is also useless. But if to sit above is simply an exhibition of arrogance, defiance. So, Vidya Devi, she is a servant of Krishna. She is not your servant. She sits below Krishna. She will not sit below you. That's why the Guru is worshipped. Why? Because he is a representative of Saraswati, Shuddha Saraswati, representative of Vyas. Because his knowledge, which is so much valuable, comes down through him. It's not that knowledge is not valuable. The actual knowledge is the most valuable thing. Because that is inseparable from bhakti, vairagya vidya. That knowledge is inseparable from bhakti. Therefore Guru is worshipped. Not worshipped because he's, for any other reason, but because he delivers this knowledge. Hare Krishna. Is there any question about this? You can sit here. I'm not going to, from behind, that's another thing. Below and in front. You can sit wherever you like. I'm not forcing you to do anything. I'm just telling. If you like, you can hear. I'm not going to come and beat you with a stick.
I have two questions for that. One is that sometimes, according to Vaishnava etiquette, is that publicly we should not offer obeisances to some.
Publicly we should not offer obeisances according to Vaishnava etiquette. Which shastra is that in?
Some senior devotee told me that do not pay me obeisances because it is public.
He may tell you, but actually according to Vaishnava, according to proper etiquette, you should always, whenever you see a superior, should always offer obeisances. It may be that the public is so uncultured that they may not appreciate. Although Prabhupada, he never discouraged his disciples. This question came out to me several times. I just came back from the West. And this question came out to me several times. Should we offer obeisances in public? Because some senior devotees say not to. I say, I tell them, if they tell you, then you may not do to them. But as far as I'm concerned, I'm just a dog, but somehow or other I'm taking the position of representing Srila Prabhupada, who never discouraged his disciples. In fact, he told that disciples, they should always bow down before the spiritual master. He never discouraged in public, but the public may not like it. So I said, as far as I'm concerned, you should do. They were asking, in the airport should we do? Because people may think differently. I said, well, then they'll always think, they'll never get used to it. They have to get used to it. Now they got used to us dancing in the streets, and they actually like it. In the beginning, they didn't like it. They thought it was very strange in the West. They got used to us dressing like this. So let them get used to it. Let them become cultured. If in the beginning they don't like it, that's their problem. It's not our problem. So I don't discourage it. If someone in particular discourages you, he may think it's bad preaching because people complain. Although, I don't know. I don't know any cases of people complaining. And if they complain, then you explain to them. But personally, I don't discourage it. But it is incorrect to say that it's against the principles of Vaishnava etiquette to bow down in public before a sadhu. Rather, it's against the principles of Vaishnava etiquette not to bow down. Although under certain circumstances, if someone particularly, for some particular reason, tells you not to, then in that case, the proper thing to do is not to do so. But it's not a general principle of Vaishnava etiquette. That's a mistake, to think like that. There may be some adjustment, but that doesn't change the basic principle.
And second question. Well, actually, we are waiting for your book on the Loyan Guru and the book on the Vaishnava behavior. So
yeah, book on Vaishnava behavior is much needed. Huh?
Yeah, that's the one I was asking that.
When's it going to come? I don't know. The book on Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is in the final editing. The final editor is in Mayapur, which is in flooded now, so I'm out of email contact with him. And whenever I get it back from him, we'll have a little back and forward, and it can go for laying out. And Krishna willing, it should be printed by Gaur Purnima at latest.
Yeah.
Then after that, I can get back to the other books. In the meantime, I brought some of the other books here. You can take there are other books also. So you can take them also.
Thank you, Maharaj.
There's some other question? Yeah, please.
First of all, thank you very much for the wonderful lecture, and we also want to apologize for any major offense.
I'm not blaming you. It's not a major offense. But I'm not blaming you because you don't know. But it just showed to me how much people don't, even our devotees, they don't recognize even basic principles. Like I was saying, in the Western countries, among our devotees, it's considered quite normal and acceptable for devotees to marry, have a few children, divorce, remarry, have one or two children by another wife, and on like this. Which is not even human behavior, what to speak of the behavior of the most, we're supposed to be teaching the most exalted thing. So there's some serious problems there. And that India is adopting the Western culture is a complete disaster. It's the worst thing. Far worse than the Muslim invasion, far worse than the division of India into India and Pakistan, far worse than the British, what is it, Jallianwala Bagh, and far worse than all of this is MTV, McDonald's, Gurgaon culture, etc. Pubs. It's a complete disaster. It's a complete insult to everything, all the great sadhus of India, many of whom are not even known, that great culture, all your forefathers, Kashyap Gotra, Gautam Gotra, all these, so many generations of highly elevated persons, and now you're simply insulting them. Even this cricket, which they think it's just an insult. We say Bharat Mata. This is just an imagination. But if there is any Bharat Mata, she's being insulted. What is the spirit of Bharat? It's being insulted by modern Indian rascals. Who are the Indian rascals? There's more than a billion of them. It means practically everyone in India has become just a complete rascal. Rejecting your own culture. What was your question?
With your permission, I wanted to understand how should we react when we make such a fault and a senior devotee points it out?
Just learn. The best thing to do is don't do it again. I'm not angry at you. I'm just taking it as a symptom of how far away everyone is. And the present generation, your generation, in the big cities, they don't know anything more about Vedic culture than someone growing up in New York. Maybe a little bit. Still, Punjabis especially, they touch the feet of their parents. Now they're having the old age homes because they don't want to look after their parents. Girls get married after they've had 3 abortions and 20 boyfriends. And then they get married on the condition that we don't have to live with your parents. All rascals.
Maharaj, you are feeling guilty because that's why we are having the guilt. That's why.
All right, well, I have a book here called Glimpses of Traditional Indian Life, which gives some insight into that culture. If you feel you're guilty, which I'm not feeling, but you can take that book and learn something about about what is the value of this culture. Yeah, anything else? I have to go, actually. I have another lecture elsewhere. Yeah, you can't learn. You're sitting above. That was the whole point of the lecture. I don't want to engage in this farce with you. All right, Hare Krishna. I think time's up, huh? Okay.
Maharaj, is there any difference between Atman and Jiva? Soul and Jiva?
Atma and Jiva, is there any difference? Well, they're two words which generally refer to the same entity. Atma can mean body, mind, soul, and super soul, Bhagavan. Whereas Jeev generally refers only to the individual soul. Although it can also refer to Bhagavan, but generally refers to the Jeevatma. Often the two words are used in conjunction to make it clear. So please all read Prabhupada's books, Bhagavad Gita as it is, Srimad Bhagavatam. Even then you have to learn how to read. I see devotees there lying down like this, reading. You can't learn like that. Even how to sit when we read. That will also affect how we understand. It's very common in the West. I see devotees there. It's a kind of habit that people, they do read. In karmi life, they do reading as a kind of relaxation. So they do. They get their Bhagavad Gita and they're lying down and they're reading. You can't learn anything like this. It's not possible. In Bhagavad Gita, we find Arjuna asks Krishna that, what is that? Kima sita prajeta king? Prajahati yadaka. No, what's the verse before that? Kima sita. Prag. Stita pragya se ka bhasha, samadhi stita keshava. What is it? Stita pragya. What's the next line? Stita pragya se ka bhasha. Anyways, how does a self-realized person walk? How does he talk? How does he sit? All these things have to be learned. The essence of that is prajahati yadaha kama, sarvan kama. That one who is freed from the desire for sense gratification. Sita pragyasta dochate. So this means again, everything has to be done for Krishna's pleasure. The rakshasa culture is everything should be done for my pleasure. Krishna conscious culture, everything done for Krishna's pleasure. And then in between, what we call human culture, is it's not clearly focused on Bhagavan, but at least there's some dealings that we of consideration for others. That's human culture. And Rakshasa culture means just for myself.